Hot this morning. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our study, our critical, important, fascinating study of the question, when did or will the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9, 24 to 27 come to an end? As I have said and urged repeatedly, the answer to this question is, in many ways, a key to understanding biblical eschatology. Now, you know, over the last little while, and I am filming this particular section just immediately prior to Thanksgiving 2021. Leading up to this, I've been involved in a formal written debate with a professor by the name of Sergius Bale. Now, he's a caustic, acerbic, individual, quote, scholar, unquote. He doesn't act in a scholarly manner, but not all of that aside. Okay. As we discuss the dating of the book of Revelation, I made the point that one of the critical omissions, the lacunae gaps in his understanding of the book of Revelation, is that he fails to understand that the book of Revelation is not focused on the wider world. It's not focused on the, quote, end of time. It is focused on the imminent, to John, fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel. And Mr. Bale responded in his second affirmative presentation that was just absolutely false. And his response was, it's not true they were Christians, not Jews. Well, you will seldom find anything more evasive, more obfuscatory, and more irrelevant. And here's why. Jesus said he came into the world not to destroy the law and the prophets, but to fulfill the law and the prophets. Let's be perfectly clear here, ladies and gentlemen. When Jesus spoke those words, Matthew 5, 17 and 18, there was no New Testament. There was no book of Acts. There was no Romans, Corinthians, Galatians, etc. The law and the prophets that Jesus came to fulfill were the old covenant prophets. Likewise, Peter, writing after the cross, writing after Pentecost, and Mr. Bale is on record as arguing that the law of Moses passed away at the cross. Now, strangely enough, he turns right around and says that we're still waiting for the fulfillment of some of those Old Testament prophecies. So on the one hand, he says the law, the Old Covenant, the Tanakh, was removed at the cross, then turns right around and says, well, no, some of the prophecies are still valid. That's a direct contradiction of what Jesus said. Not one jot, not one tittle would pass from the law and the prophets until it was all fulfilled. So Mr. Bale contradicts Jesus. But Peter, in Acts chapter 3, and again, well after the cross where Mr. Bale says the law was supposedly nailed to the cross, Peter said that his doctrine of the, quote, restoration of all things, in the Greek it's the apokatastasis, his hope of Israel, hope of the world, I might add, would be the fulfillment of all of the prophets who have ever written from Moses and Samuel, yea, who have ever written. Now, let me ask you a question, ladies and gentlemen. If Peter's hope of the restoration of all things, which is the new creation of Revelation chapter 21. And since Peter said that his hope of that restoration was from Moses, the law, and the prophets, doesn't that mean that John's expectation of the new creation was likewise from Moses, the law, and the prophets? Well, of course it does. And so it just simply demonstrates how completely out of touch Mr. Bale, and oh, by the way, his particular religion, which is Eastern Orthodox, So he is citing, he is arguing from that perspective of the Eastern Orthodox, denying that Revelation is about the imminent fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel. Yet Peter's expectation of the new creation is the same as John's in Revelation 21. And Peter said his expectation was from Moses, Samuel, and all of the Old Testament prophets. Likewise, Paul. Paul said his doctrine of the resurrection was from the law and the prophets. Acts 24, 14 and following. He said he taught nothing other than what the Moses and the law and the prophets said would come to pass, that Christ would be the first to be raised from the dead, and that life and light would be preached to the Gentiles. Where did Paul get his gospel? From the Tanakh. And somebody said, no, 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 he said he got his gospel directly from Jesus. That's exactly correct. Where did Jesus teach from? Oh, Moses, the law, and the prophets. So I hope you can see what is so important here. What I'm getting at is this. Daniel chapter 9 foretold the coming of the world of everlasting righteousness, which we discussed in one of our previous videos. I hope you'll go back and look at that. So Daniel chapter 9 foretold the arrival of the world of everlasting righteousness. The world of everlasting righteousness is the new creation of Revelation 21 and 22. That means that the arrival of the new heaven and the new earth, the everlasting world of righteousness of Daniel chapter 9 and Revelation 21, would arrive no later than the end of the 70 weeks of Daniel, which you cannot extend beyond AD 70. Now, as I write this, I haven't posted my second negative in response to Mr. Bale's denial that the book of Revelation is about the imminent fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel. He will only have his final affirmative to try to respond to that. But that debate will be posted on my website, donkpreston.com, Bibleprophecy.com. And so you can go there, you'll be able to read how Mr. Bale attempts to respond to the fact that everything in the book of Revelation, its doctrine of the resurrection, its doctrine of the new heaven and the new earth, its doctrine of the kingdom is taken from the Old Testament. As a matter of fact, as I've already pointed out in this debate, there is no other book in all of the New Testament that quotes, cites, alludes to, utilizes the Old Testament as extensively as does the book of Revelation. And yet we're supposed to believe, oh, well, it's not really about the fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made back there in the Old Testament. I guess Mr. Bale would have us to believe that John just found some convenient language from the Old Testament. So he ripped that language out of its original context and arbitrarily and capriciously applied it to events and to people unrelated to the original prophecies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't say much for Mr. Bale's view of inspiration. It doesn't say much for the unity of the biblical prophetic narrative. Now, I say all of that to say this. If it is true that in Daniel chapter 9 and in the prophecy of the bringing in of everlasting righteousness, if that is in any way related to the restoration of all things of Acts chapter 3, if it is in any way related to, and if it serves, pardon me, if it serves as the ground and the basis for Peter's doctrine of the new heaven and the new earth, wherein dwells righteousness, and if it serves as the ground, the foundation, and the fountain of John's doctrine of the new creation in Revelation 21 and 22, then, as stated, the critical importance of Daniel chapter 9 is driven home like a pile driver. Because let me reiterate, you cannot get the countdown of the 70 weeks beyond the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Therefore, the arrival of the everlasting world of righteousness of Daniel 9, the new creation of 2 Peter 3, the restoration of all things of Acts 3, the new creation of Revelation 21, all had to be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Do you see why it's critically important to understand when the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9 were fulfilled? Now, let me reiterate. While there are many, even some preterists, who try to argue that the 70 weeks ended in 34 or 35, that will not work. That denies that Peter was anticipating the arrival of the restoration of all things that was foretold by Daniel. So in other words, you've got to be able to demonstrate definitively that the everlasting world of righteousness is not the restoration of all things of Acts chapter 3. You likewise have to be able to prove it's not the new heaven and new earth wherein dwells righteousness of 2 Peter 3. And you've got to be able to prove it's not the new creation of Revelation 21 and 22. And yet, over and over, the book of Revelation draws on Daniel 7, Daniel chapter 12. The book of Revelation draws on Daniel chapter 12 extensively, as virtually all scholars agree, in its teaching on the resurrection. So here is Revelation drawing on Daniel, which I think we could all agree is an old covenant promise made to old covenant Israel. And John was anticipating the fulfillment of those prophecies very soon. John was told, as he draws his apocalypse to its close, do not seal the vision of this book because the time is at hand. So we have John drawing on Daniel, drawing on Isaiah 65 and 66, drawing on Zechariah, drawing on Ezekiel 37, and over we could go. Here is John drawing on all of these old covenant prophecies of the resurrection, the kingdom, the new creation, etc., and John was told fulfillment was at hand. So on every single level, we must categorically reject the view of Mr. Sergius Bale and the Eastern Orthodox Church. And by the way, I was raised in the amillennial view. That said, God was through with Israel at the cross. God was through the Old Covenant at the cross. And in 1991, maybe 1992, somewhere along in there, I'm terrible on remembering dates, I had a formal public debate with Bill Lockwood, a Church of Christ minister. And in written form, I asked Bill Lockwood, are your eschatological hopes based upon, taken from, the yet future fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel? Now, I handed those questions to him before the debate began that night. According to the rules, he had to get them back to me before my very first presentation. He delayed. And finally, I walked over to his table and I said, Bill, I need your answers. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry, acting like he had forgotten. And finally handed his questions to me. And in his answer to that particular question, are your eschatological hopes based upon, taken from, God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel? Out in the margin, he wrote in bold capital letters, no, in quotation marks, underlined three times with exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. And I got up and I had charts. And I pointed out what Peter said, where his doctrine of the resurrection, of the new creation, the restoration of all things, where it came from. I quoted from Paul. I quoted from John. And I turned to him and I said, Brother Lockwood, you say your gospel, your doctrine, your eschatology is not from the Old Testament. Peter, Paul, and John said their gospel was nothing but the doctrine found in Moses, the law, and the prophet. And Paul condemned anyone teaching a different gospel. You just admitted that you teach a different gospel from these apostles. He refused to say even one single word in response. You see, this is how critical this is, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I've pointed out Sergius Bale and the Eastern Orthodox Church, but it's also true, like I said, of the amillennial world who says God was through with Israel at the cross. So what I'm saying here is that if, in fact, as I established in the previous video on Daniel 9, 70 weeks are determined to bring in everlasting righteousness, if that bringing in of everlasting righteousness is related to the kingdom, and by the way, folks, I don't know very many people, hardly anyone, that denies this. About the only ones that I know that deny that are the ones who say that Daniel 9 is not messianic. It has to do with the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, has nothing to do with the first century, has nothing to do with AD 70, has nothing to do with the resurrection. So apart from those folks, I don't know of hardly anyone that denies that Daniel chapter 9 is about the establishment of the kingdom. Pardon me, please. Allergies. Okay, if Daniel 9 is about the establishment of the kingdom, and Daniel 9 extends no later than AD 70, but Daniel 9 is about the bringing in of everlasting righteousness, which is the new creation, ladies and gentlemen. This cannot be overemphasized. If the everlasting world of righteousness of Daniel 9, let me reiterate, let me drive it home, because you really, really, really have to catch the power of this. If the bringing in of everlasting righteousness of Daniel 9 is the new creation, the restoration of all things, and the new heaven and new earth. If that's the same thing, then you can't say it took place at the cross, and you can't say it took place in 34 or 35 A.D. because Paul was looking for it in Galatians 5:5. We through the Spirit eagerly await the hope of righteousness. Peter was looking for it, the new heaven, new earth, promised in the old covenant. John was looking for the new heaven and new earth in Revelation chapter 21. They all wrote after 34 and 35 A.D. They all wrote after the cross. Therefore, Daniel 9 was not fulfilled at the cross. And it was not fulfilled in 34 or 35 A.D. Okay, I've got to move on. In this video, I want to share with you what is, without a doubt, some of the most exciting biblical studies that I have been involved in, and a little bit of an anecdote here. Some years ago, I was sitting in the audience when Dave Curtis, with the Berean Bible Church in Virginia Beach, gave a lesson on the feast days of Israel and eschatology. Now, mind you, being raised in the Churches of Christ, the amillennial world, I had never in my life, never, not one time, heard a single lesson on the correlation, the relationship between Israel's feast days and eschatology. Dave did an absolutely masterful job of showing the typological nature of Israel's feast days and how they were fulfilled in the first century. I sat there enthralled. I sat there stunned. I sat there jubilant. I sat there and I got angry. And you say, why? I turned to my wife and I said, why is it that I have lived this long and I have never in my life heard a lesson like this that is so demonstrably true? All she could do is shake her head. She had never heard any of it. From that time, I got to know a marvelous, marvelous Bible student by the name of Bill Canongeiser, who was a walking encyclopedia about Israel's feast days. He and I became close friends. Unfortunately, Bill passed away a few years ago. And Bill and I would call each other, and he would share with me his insights into the feast days. And once again, I would just be absolutely enthralled. And I would be saddened at my own ignorance. Okay, jump forward several years ago, or several years. After exploring Daniel chapter 9 more extensively, and after studying the feast days a good bit more, trying to get a handle on the typological meaning of the feast days, and make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, Hebrews chapter 9 says the earthly temple and its cultus were typological of the heavenly realities. In Hebrews chapter 10, 1 and 4, 1 through 4, the writer says, the law having a shadow of the good things that are about to come. He's just been describing the Day of Atonement and how the high priest on the Day of Atonement killed a sacrifice, went into the most holy place, and came out. And he said, now unto those who eagerly look for him, he shall appear a second time apart from sin for salvation, for the law having a shadow of the good things about to come. So the writer is setting forth the Day of Atonement praxis as typological of the work of Christ in offering himself as a sacrifice, entering into the most holy place, and about to come out to bring salvation, the salvation purchased with his blood. Folks, that tells us, beyond any shadow of a doubt, the feast days were typological. And then, of course, we have Colossians chapter 2, which most people appeal to say, Paul said the law was nailed to the cross. No, Paul says the handwriting of ordinances was nailed to the cross. Let me urge you, go to my website, donkpreston.com, bibleprophecy.com, and do a search for Dallas Burdett on Colossians chapter 2, 14 to 17. Dr. Burdett has been a professor and had taught both Hebrew and Greek on the college and university level. He wrote an article at my request on Colossians chapter 2, demonstrating absolutely unequivocally, Paul did not say that it was the law that was nailed to the cross. It was the debt of sin incurred through violation of the law. Two totally different things. But here's the kicker. On the one hand, people say, well, you know, Paul said the law was nailed to the cross, but wait a minute. Paul also said, let no man judge you in respect of new moons, feast days, and Sabbaths, which is in the present active indicative, shadows of the good things about to come. So we have a present active indicative, and we have a future. How could Paul say that the feast days, the new moons, the feast days, and the Sabbaths were, when he wrote in approximately AD 62, shadows of good things that had not yet come, but which were about to come? How could Paul do that if the law itself was nailed to the cross? You see, it makes no sense whatsoever. And that means, and that brings up the fact that in a future video in this series, I'm going to be talking about Daniel chapter 9 and the end of the law, because it's critically important to understand this issue. But to move on. So I want to set before you the reality that Israel's feast days are, a real quick anecdote. Some years ago, I was sharing some of my understanding with a friend of mine named Doug Wilkinson through email. And this happened over a period of weeks, perhaps months. And finally, Doug Wilkinson, who had never studied the feast days himself, he wrote back and he said, Don, I have now become convinced that Israel's feast days are the Rosetta Stone of biblical eschatology. And I wrote back and I told him, I said, well, you can just consider that term stolen because I'm going to use that from now on. And I have. I tried to give proper credit because he came up with that term. But the point of fact is the feast days of Israel are, in fact, the Rosetta Stone of biblical eschatology. Israel had seven feast days. Passover, Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Now, with that in mind, okay, remembering, keeping in mind that Paul said Israel's feast days were shadows of the good things that were about to come. I want to share with you, and I'm not going to take three or four videos to do this, but I want to share with you how the feast days serve as, book fell off. Listen, I'm not going to show you a picture of my desk. Let's just say I've got about 20 books stacked up as I'm researching for my debate with Mr. Bale. So, this concept of the feast days being the key to understanding Daniel 9. I have mentioned in previous videos that I have become friends with a man that is a Jew in Israel who is regarded as one of the top Hebrew scholars in the world. And I'm just privileged to be able to bounce stuff off of him and to get his insight. And he is extremely familiar with the ancient rabbinic sources, with the commentaries. So he's been extremely helpful to me in that regard. And so as I studied on the relationship between Daniel 9 and the feast days, and I'm turning over to Daniel chapter 9, and I hope you have your Bibles open. In Daniel chapter 9, I believe that we have sufficient evidence for making the argument that Daniel 9, 24 to 27 is based squarely upon the fulfillment of God's Old Covenant festal calendar. Now, in 2013, I presented a lesson on this very concept. Pardon me. That lesson was, seminal in many ways. It was introductory of some of my preliminary thinking at the time. And I have to tell you, the reaction to the lesson was phenomenal. You know, following that presentation, as people began to download the lessons, as they began to purchase the MP3s and the DVDs, and if you're interested in purchasing that, just contact me through my website, donkpreston.com or bibleprophecy.com. But the response was absolutely phenomenal. So I contacted my friend in Israel, and I said, I want to know from the ancient sources if the ancient rabbis saw that Daniel 9 is based squarely upon Israel's feast days. He wrote back and he said, well, I have to tell you, I've never heard that concept before in my life. I gave him a brief delineation of my reasoning for making that statement and sent it back to him. After about 3, 4, 5 weeks, he wrote back to me and he said, in regard to your thinking concerning Daniel 9 and the feast days, he said, I've shared that concept with several rabbis, leading rabbis in Israel today. And he said, not one of them had ever heard of the concept. However, some of them said, this is more than intriguing. This has validity to it because it's based upon the feast days, and it is based upon statements from Daniel Therefore, this is more than worthy of investigation. Now, look, does that prove it's true and accurate? No, not within itself. But let me share with you why I believe, and this will be brief, and let me just share with you, at this particular time that I'm filming this, I am trying to put the finishing touches on a book entitled The Last Day, The Last Hour, The Last Trump Resurrection. And in that book, I am focused on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. Those final three feast days of Israel, which are eschatological to the core, and how in the New Testament, the predictions of the harvest, the predictions of the judgment, the predictions of the second coming of Christ are all absolutely inextricably bound up with the eschatological consummation and the fulfillment of Israel's feast days. Now, why is that significant? Well, think about what I shared with you a few moments ago. And let me put it like this. If Daniel chapter 9 and its prediction of the 70 weeks are determined to put away sin, finish the transgression, make the atonement, seal vision and prophecy, anoint the most holy, bring in everlasting righteousness, if all of those things, if any of those things are based upon Israel's festal calendar, and if that festal calendar was typological, which I've already proven that it is, if Israel's festal calendar was typological of the coming eschatological consummation, and they were, then the fact that you cannot get the fulfillment of Daniel chapter 9 beyond AD 70 means, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot get the eschatological consummation of the judgment, the second coming, and the resurrection harvest beyond AD 70. You just can't do it. So let's look at the idea that Daniel 9 is in fact based upon Israel's festal calendar. And I call your attention, first of all, to Daniel chapter 9, verse 26. After the 60 and the 2 weeks, which is technically after the 69th week, Messiah shall be cut off. Well, ladies and gentlemen, according to Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul said Jesus is our Passover. Why? Because he was slain. As a lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Well, what was the slain lamb? The Passover. So here is Daniel chapter 9, right in the heart of its discussion, referencing the sacrifice of Christ. After the 69th week, Messiah shall be cut off. Okay, Christ died after the 69th week. Any way you want to do that calculation. There's the fulfillment of Passover. But, you know what? Daniel chapter 9 also says, 70 weeks are determined to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 26. Now once, at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Well, is the putting away of sin of Daniel chapter 9 a different putting away of sin from that in Hebrews chapter 9, 26? Well, you know it's not. Where's the evidence for such a thing? And remember, you need to go back and watch the videos. I did two videos on the putting away of sin, pointing out that the final putting away of sin, which is at the time of the resurrection, would be at the coming of the Lord. Not at the cross, but through the cross. So we have Daniel 9:26 telling us that the Messiah was cut off after the 69th week. We have the 70 weeks being determined to put away sin. Oh, and then 70 weeks are determined to make the atonement. Hello? So we've gone from Passover and the cross all the way to Yom Kippur. Now, in the interim between Passover and Pentecost is not explicitly mentioned, but guess what? It doesn't have to. You know what? When it mentions the cutting off of Messiah, and when it mentions the putting away of sin, and then it jumps to making the atonement, then guess what? Then we know that the entire festal calendar is under consideration, ladies and gentlemen. You just can't divorce. You can't take Jehoiakim's penknife and go in there and slice and dice. As well, okay, maybe he does talk about Passover, and maybe he does talk about the cross, but that doesn't mean he's concerned with the second coming. Well, if he's involved, if he is discussing 70 weeks are determined to make the atonement, then yes, he is talking about the second coming of Christ. Ladies and gentlemen, please go back and look at the video on 70 weeks are determined to make the atonement. It is a completely misguided view to believe, to say, and to claim that the atonement was finished at the cross. Was it initiated at the cross? Without any doubt whatsoever. Nobody's denying that. I certainly am not denying that. But as I pointed out in that video, in ancient rabbinic thought, in ancient Hebraic commentaries, it was never, ever, ever taught that the atonement was finished with the killing of the sacrifice. Never. As I pointed out in the previous video, according to Leviticus chapter 9, verse 22 and following, no blessing of any sacrifice was ever applied until the high priest came out of the most holy place. And thus the writer of Hebrews says, Christ appeared at the end of the age to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. He entered into the most holy place there to prepare it. And to those who were eagerly looking for him in the first century 2,000 years ago, he would appear again apart from sin for salvation. He would bring the salvation and apply that which he had purchased through his blood. He purchased the salvation through dying, entering into the most holy place, offering that blood on the Ark of the Covenant in the most holy place. But he had to come out to bring salvation. And you know, folks, this brings up a key issue, and I discussed it in the previous video. We are told, well, okay, you know, Christ completed the atonement at the cross. Well, if that's true, then salvation was a reality at the cross. And people like to respond and say, well, that's absolutely true. Because Paul says, for by grace we have been saved through faith, Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. Well, as I pointed out, that's true, but it's proleptic. It's talking about the process that had begun, but that would not be consummated until Christ's second coming. That is the typological imagery of the Day of Atonement. Salvation would only come at the parousia, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Peter teaches. 1 Peter chapter 1, 9 and following, where he writes to the brethren, and he says, you are receiving a present participial, the end, the goal of your faith, that is the salvation of your souls, concerning which salvation the prophets who have spoken before have searched and inquired diligently concerning the time and the manner of that salvation, concerning which salvation they were informed that not to themselves did they minister those things, but to us. So Peter is saying they were in the process of receiving it. But guess what he goes ahead to say? They were looking for the revelation of Jesus Christ to bring consummated salvation. And so what we have here in Daniel, it, by the reference to the atonement, we have the beginning of Israel's festival calendar, and we have the coming of, guess what? The atonement, which is, you know, in the middle of the last three. Oh, but wait a minute. In Daniel chapter 9, 26 and following, the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. When? Oh, it would be after the death of the Messiah, which was itself after the 69th week, which means it would be in the middle of the 70th week. So the writer then says, and the end thereof. Well, what end is he pointing toward? He started off the 70-week countdown from the going forth of the decree to rebuild and to restore Jerusalem. Okay, 69 weeks. After the 69th week, and then in the middle of the week, and then the end thereof. Folks, that's the end of the 70 weeks. What's the end of the 70th week? In Daniel chapter 9, 27, the utter desolation of Jerusalem. So here we have Rosh Hashanah, the judgment. So in Daniel 9, 26 and 27, we have Rosh Hashanah, the judgment. We have Yom Kippur, the atonement. Oh, but wait. We also have, remember, 70 weeks are determined to bring in everlasting righteousness. What is everlasting righteousness? Well, it's the kingdom. It's the new heaven and the new earth. It's the resurrection. It is the full arrival of that state, that status, that blessing of being made righteous in Messiah. And Daniel said that would be fulfilled, that everlasting world of righteousness would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Now, ladies and gentlemen, unless you can 100% completely divorce the feast days and each of the constituent elements that I've shared with you in brevity today, in brevity, and yet we know the feast days are involved because it's the death of Messiah, which is Passover. We know the feast days are involved because it's the putting away of sin. It's the atonement. And we know bringing in of everlasting righteousness, by the way, is the celebration of Shemini Atzeret, the day after Sukkot, which foreshadowed and celebrated the completion of God's scheme of redemption. It anticipated it, looked forward to it, and what it rejoiced in was God's new creation ushered in through the resurrection of Sukkot. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot argue that the law and the feast days were all fulfilled at the cross without having to divorce, without demanding that you be able to divorce Daniel 9 from the feast days, in spite of the fact that it explicitly mentions them. So if you say Daniel 9 was fulfilled at the cross, then Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot were all fulfilled at the cross. Well, I'm sorry, that won't work. Will it? No. That wasn't the judgment. That is not when Yom Kippur was consummated. That is not when the new creation arrived. You cannot say the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9 have been fulfilled without saying and believing in the full preterist paradigm. And you cannot say the 70 weeks of Daniel are not yet fulfilled without saying that every jot and every tittle of the law of Moses, the entire festal calendar with its bloody sacrifices, is still valid and binding today. And yet, I don't know of a dispensationalist alive who says that's true right now. The 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9 were to be ended, consummated, fulfilled in the fulfillment of Israel's festal calendar, which means and which demands the judgment, the second coming, and the resurrection were in AD 70. Okay, thank you for joining me. In our next video, we're going to be taking a look at the question, well, okay, Preston, you have gone over extensively in your series on, is there a gap between the 69th and the 70th week of Daniel? But now you're positing a 40-year gap between Pentecost and Rosh Hashanah. That's right. But you know why? Because an interim was demanded in Israel's festal calendar. So I'll see you in the next video.